Raymond Grey Power is pleased to sponsor this edition of Senior Focus. Welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie. I'm your presenter for this session of Senior Focus. And this is our end of year pre-Christmas session. And at this time of the year, people are reflecting on the year. They're sometimes reflecting on what's uppermost in the news, and it seems to have been quite a heavy-duty week here in Auckland anyway. We've had three murders to deal with, one very high-profile, which has been all over the media, which you'll be aware of, the Grace Mullane case, and which has become a national thing that even the Prime Minister's commented on. Another one in South Auckland, possibly people haven't even heard of, which was a run-of-the-mill sort of case, I suppose, where a domestic went too far. And a third one was a rather tragic one and involved a youth who tried to stop a fight. So it's been, you know, quite a difficult week for me personally, because I've been involved in at least one of the communities where one of these events took place. And it's very important to support youth at a time like this when they've lost one of their own, to make sure there isn't repercussions throughout the community and further suffering that's tragic. So yeah, it's been quite a tough week. But when I look at it from a grey power lens, I look at it from the point of view of grandparents who worry about their grandchildren. They worry about their grandchildren's safety on the streets, whether it's on bicycles or crossing the road or busing to school. They worry about them growing up and handling relationships and situations going wrong. And they also worry about their own children who may be in violent relationships, and they suspect, often it's even though nothing's said, people see various telltale signs and join the dots, and so they worry but don't necessarily talk. And sometimes these things tumble out in conversation. People coming to see us in our office sometimes begin to unburden themselves, and that's the value of us having an office. We haven't had this situation before, perhaps because usually people make only brief contact, maybe about their membership, paying their fees, that sort of thing, and it's often in a semi-public environment like our public meeting or in the library or somewhere like that. So for us to have an office, we are providing a listening ear, and we're actually listening into some of the deeper things that are hurting and frustrating people. And it's one of those issues, domestic violence, which depends what sort of a lens you put over, how you view it, what you think the solutions might be. And from a social science perspective, where we try to be reasonably objective, there have been groups coming together trying to work out what's the best way of tackling this, what's the best way of tackling any violence towards anyone. It's all on a continuum. So whether it's kids beating them one another up at school and bullying, or whether it's somebody attacking an elderly gentleman over a torch, which wasn't too long ago, a murder that came through the courts and was well aired in the media. But we have this continuum. So it's across the lifespan, and the amount of violence, the frequency and the severity has increased dramatically. But at the same time, there's also random violence, which has increased. So all of this impacts on the safety issues that Grey Power would be wanting to raise at the moment. So we work with others and across the community. We've had conversations with the seniors panel. We've had conversations with the Law and Order champions and the Indian Association. We've had conversations with leaders of senior organisations about elder abuse, whether it's Age Concern or Shanti Niwas or other groups. So we're not silent and we are not isolates in the sense we make sure that we're collaborating with the other voices, that we're adding value. And while we don't conduct research on our own, we actually do read research. We have access to the Family Violence Clearinghouse research, which is probably the best think tank for research on family violence in New Zealand. And we get regular updates from them. So we're well informed when we go to advocate at local government or government levels. I think that's very important to understand. We are not just wanting to turn the clock back and say, wouldn't it be nice if we were like New Zealand in the 1950s? Because we aren't and we're not going to be. We're quite realistic, but we also know that, for example, there's a lot of advances in technology which can benefit older people. I notice there's a new smartphone out, which is not very expensive. It's quite reasonably priced and it has a button on it which once it's set up and it can be activated, and it will send a message to five individuals, including police, and it will allow a person who's experiencing considerable threat of violence to do something in the early stages to seek help very directly. And things like this are a great advance. The difficulty is, of course, not all seniors are digitally savvy and not all are going to have a phone like this. But this is something the family can support with. The family can purchase the phone. The family can set up the button. The family can instruct the person how to use it and they can practice. And I think quite often the gap between being digitally savvy and not is actually how many small steps there are that you can go through and be instructed and practice so that you can actually get to the point of feeling confident of using something. And it may be way more number of steps than what a young person might need, but the point is it can be broken down. And just like very young children can be taught all sorts of things if you break it down into small steps, I believe the same is true at the other end of the spectrum of life. So if you're thinking about what to get an older person for Christmas, this new type of phone might well be one of those presents that could be very useful, provided you're going to provide that support. Now, also in the news has been a lot about transport, of course, about the safety on the roads and the road toll. And this week we've had three submissions that we've put into Auckland Transport, one on the regional transport plan, one on the cycling and roading changes in Grey Lynn, and one on the changes in Frost Road and Carr Road area in Mount Roskill. Now, both of those are local things and they affect locals who ride or whose grandchildren ride with them in those areas. So we're mindful about what locals have been saying to us. But in terms of the regional public transport plan, the last time we delivered a submission on that, we got a hearing and we spent a whole hour with senior management, and many, I think it was five Grey Power members actually presented. So we had somebody from the cycling community, somebody who regularly went on the ferries to Waiheke and had observed various things. We had people living on the Central Isthmus who had concerns about cross town buses and so on. So we actually got a whole lot covered in that, and it was very valuable. We set that up as a deliberate strategy to have a closer relationship with Auckland Transport. Now, it's been a mixed bag as to how successful it was, as to whether we were actually accorded due status and deference as a stakeholder. I don't think it actually brought about quite the level of access that we'd hoped in terms of our feedback and our being heard as being a voice for seniors. But we did get some resolution around the introduction of the gold hop card, which wasn't well handled, and so subsequent improvements occurred with our feedback. And more recently, we've had the new bus routes through. So there's been some very welcome changes in some of those routes, and feedback continues to flow in. But this particular regional plan was about prioritising walking and cycling. It was about the introduction of new technologies, and it was about the balance between emphasis and funding and provision of public transport as opposed to other transport. So I guess that the key thing for us was to look at safety on the footpaths, safety in cycleways, and vulnerable users, and there being some collision of interests there between, say, those that want to travel fast on footpaths and those who are struggling to stand on their feet and stay mobile with their sticks and walkers and get along that footpath, and having people rushing past at high speed, whether on a scooter or a bike, can be very off-putting and can cause people just to fall over, just a shock to their system. So a lot of people, of course, making decisions don't understand what it's like to be that vulnerable. They've never been in a body that's been experiencing that degree of vulnerability. So, you know, to get the view across of how critical this is, I guess, is one of our biggest challenges. And one of the ways, of course, is to separate some of the potential collisions by actually saying, well, maybe scooters should be on the cycle lane if they're going fast, if they're e-scooters, not children, but on the ordinary scooters. But, you know, if they're on the e-scooters and they're doing 25Ks, maybe they should be in a cycleway. And that would be more akin to the speed that a regular commuter cyclist would be doing. And then how do those people stay safe when they're interacting with trucks and other fast-moving vehicles that are making them vulnerable? So this vulnerability curve spreads across the road corridor, and we've advocated that it's important to have proper separate cycle lanes and cycle barriers. And indeed, this is overseas, this is quite normal, and we're seeing more and more cities moving to being carless or having tight car restrictions. So I see no big problem with this, but of course there's got to be good public transport, because if you want people to get out of their cars, you need something to offer them that's workable and that's going to get them there. And so that is the number one thing, is how much improvement can we expect in the buses? How soon will light rail be here? And are there going to be enough stops? And are they going to stop in places where people need them to stop? So we talked about the bus shelters. We talked about the information on signage and how that all needs to be improved. And certainly if you look at other countries that are getting ready for Olympics, like Japan, they've gone overboard with their signage to make sure Braille and multiple languages are available, and entrances and exits on and off stations and bus interchanges are all very clear. So we can do better, and that's been our message. It's not necessarily an antagonistic message. It's just been clear that that's what we need to be doing. So I'm wanting to reflect a little bit on what we've been achieving this year in terms of reaching out to people through our office, what we've been endeavouring to do in our public meetings. So we've gone from 4 public meetings, we've doubled the number of public meetings. Next year I think we'll go to 10 in our Blockhouse Bay environment, but recognising not everybody wants to travel to Blockhouse Bay, even though it's quite easy and there's 5 bus routes going in there, we think that there's a need to run some satellite meetings in other places. So we're looking at doing that. And so we'll be announcing that in the new year. One area we're looking at is libraries, having closer associations with libraries. And a lot of people, for varying reasons, don't always listen to the program on the Sunday slot, but they would like to pick it up afterwards, but they don't necessarily have a computer at home or access online themselves. So we're looking at maybe working a system of having podcasts available on selected topics in the libraries, in certain libraries, not every library, and running sessions with members of the committee being present, so we can actually lead a discussion, so people can come in and hear the podcast and we can all sit around and we can discuss after we've listened to the issues, then have a discussion about what more Grey Power could be doing in this space, what would members like Grey Power to be doing. And so I think it's very important that while being heard is one of our primary objectives and getting our message out to the decision makers, also listening to our members is really important too. And so that's one of the avenues that we can do that in a local environment that's comfortable and that's cost effective for us, because we won't be paying rent when we're in the library. And so that's one of the ways that we're thinking of balancing things. At the moment, we have got a full complement on the committee. We've got new people in new roles. And I think that we're going into 2019 in a strengthened way that will see good results for everyone. We had a great Christmas lunch and 2 weeks ago at the Newlyn RSA, and people really enjoyed themselves, and several people said, oh, we should do more of this. And so next year we're going to actually bring some people together to be an ideas social committee, just to look at what sort of things they want planned, how they might go about it, and what sort of budget they need, so that we can build that into our planning. And there is a community van available. We can have that for $80 a day. That includes the insurance. All we have to do is put the petrol in the tank on top of the $80. So we've figured out that including the driver taking 10, that would be 9 times, say, $20, and we could go to the ends of Auckland, top or bottom. We could go to the Botanic Gardens, for example, and do a walk there. We could go and visit heritage museums in the south. We could go through to Hamilton Gardens for the day. We could also go north to Te Hana and see what's going on in the cultural milieu of the Marae and the developments they're doing up there, which are both for tourism and for cultural understanding. And there are many, many other options as well, but it just seems to me that since this van is around, it's available through a lotteries grant to the community, we've got the option of being able to use that. That gives us scope. If you have ideas and you want to join us on trips or anything like that, just email me, annemariecoorey@gmail.com, and I'll spell that annemariecoorey, C-O-U-R-Y, @gmail.com. So I'm inviting you to write in, and also on ideas for the program. If there are topics that we haven't covered or topics you'd like us to cover, we're certainly open to hearing from people who are tuning in and who are interested in what we're covering and what we're doing. I don't think we've run out of topics, and I don't think we've actually run out of people who want to come on the program. It's a matter of timing and fitting everything in. I think it's fair to say that we are being more diverse in the kind of people we have on our committee, and therefore that diversity is going to be reflected in our program. So we will be having more Asian seniors contributing to the program just as they are involved in the committee. And I think that's very valuable, because by 2040, probably one in two Aucklanders will be Asian, and possibly, and that, but that includes Middle East as well as African. So it's kind of a, you know, it's a statistical figure, not a real person. But I guess what we're going to have to realise is that more and more of our traditional older European population have moved into retirement villages or moved out of Auckland, moved away, and they aren't active members in the way they used to be. Perhaps they've disengaged, or they like getting the newsletter, but they don't necessarily come to meetings and they don't volunteer on the committee. So we're needing to have younger people step forward. We're needing to have people who are active in these issues about safety and public transport and issues of change that affect most seniors. And so if there are people doing this kind of work and they are in other communities, it's very important that we link with them and we actually have a united voice for seniors, because the issues are not different. The colour of your skin doesn't change whether you can catch a bus easily or not, or whether the bus shelter is comfortable. So these sorts of things we can share across the board and be more effective in how we go about them. I think that it's fair to say that people are still worried about housing. It's one of those issues that's keeps cropping up. And this year we've done some programs looking at some alternatives, housing issues that don't very often get in the papers. And the work that the community housing section is doing on sector, I noticed there was an article on this over the weekend, and this is great because we've actually pioneered this in media in Auckland, and we hope to do more in this space. There are people providing emergency housing as well as the Marais. There's various small charities that have bunk houses on sites and are able to put people up on an emergency basis. And they often help a lot of pregnant women in those situations. I know the refuges are full at this time of the year. This is a very difficult time. I know people have eviction notices and they find it very difficult to move and to get places at this time of the year. So housing doesn't diminish as an issue. No room at the inn might have been a story over 2,000 years ago with the birth of Jesus, but it's actually very real today that there isn't room for a lot of people. So we'll be covering housing again next year from different points of view, and we'll have different people coming in to present on it. Because even whether you have a house of your own or not, increasingly the number of seniors who present without housing is becoming such a big issue to a lot of social agencies, because they're not used to it. They're not used to finding suitable properties and properties that younger people might tolerate or might be able to cope with the access older people can't. So the needs are quite diverse, and of course staying within your community, in the neighbourhood you know, and staying in contact with friends is terribly important. Social isolation is a killer. And so that's the key thing that we're trying to avoid all the time that we're working in this field of encouraging awareness about the issues to do with housing for seniors. So it's my pleasure to wish you a Merry Christmas and to invite you to stay in touch with us and keep listening with us next year. And thank you for your support and for all those people who've come on the program who've helped the program stay intact and continue. I am very grateful indeed, because it's not just the presenter, it's the technical staff, it's the people who keep the station going, it's the people who come in and do programs, who come and avail themselves and allow themselves to be questioned, people who give up time on the end of the phone to do the same. Without them, we wouldn't have a show. So thanks to everyone who's made the show possible this year. And we look forward to a really good show next year. And we'll continue during the holidays. So we don't shut down. The program just continues. And I suggest that you might find it very valuable to tune in with friends over the holiday period, because they may find stimulation from it as well, and then realise that, oh, it can be accessed 24/7 online. And that link is www.planetaudio.org.nz/listen/senior focus. So Planet Audio, planetaudio.org.nz/listen/senior focus. Senior focus is all one word. So that should hook you into any of the material. You'll be able to pick up past programs that have been archived, and it'll be enjoyable summer listening, I would think. So once again, thanks to you all.
Me shining, it is the night of our dear Savior's birth. Long lay the world in sin and error pining, till He appeared and the soul felt its worth. A thrill of hope, the weary world rejoices, for yonder breaks a new and glorious morn. Was born.